Yo, 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 what's goody? It's Bear in the building. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Queen Talk. Today's special guest is a licensed clinical social worker, an advocate, someone who is impacting our community tremendously, and a published author. Please welcome Dee Towns.
Hey, y'all. How y'all doing? I'm Dreka Finley Towns, so I go by Dee Towns. I'm 42. I'm from Wichita. I identify as Black. Four generations in Mississippi, so that's how I identify. And let's see, what was the other one? My pronouns are her, hers, and I identify as a lesbian in the community.
All right. I wanted to say happy National Social Workers Month.
Nice. Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. You've been getting a lot of gifts and stuff. Love this.
You know,
this
I have. I've gotten some McDonald's gift cards. I don't eat there, but you know, the kids will like it.
Nice.
And some other cards and stuff. It's nice. It's
good. Good. I don't know if you've seen Ludacris even gave the social workers a shout out. I feel like people are becoming more aware of like social workers and like the work that gets put in there. So yeah, appreciate you.
Thank you.
On your service. What what's your population you work with the social work?
Right now I work with middle school kids.
Okay.
So sixth grade to 14-year-old. In my private practice, I work with all ages. And then I also work in a group home. So that's 16, 17, and kids that are aging out of foster care.
Okay.
Yep.
Nice. So you work closely with the foster care system.
Yeah.
Nice. I've noticed or read a lot about like the foster care system, and just like there is a lot of people a part of the community that are in the foster care system, and like the statistics, I'm not sure like what they are exactly, but of people that get kicked out of their home and then put into foster care because of their identity. Have you experienced that with anyone that you've been working with?
Not with my population. To be clear, I do work at a group home, and the group home that I work with is for trans individuals that are identified as female to male trans identified.
Okay.
So they come from all over the state of Kansas. Most of the kids that I encounter have already come out, and they're already living as their preferred gender, and the reasons that they were in the system aren't gender specific.
It's
basically trauma.
Definitely. What made you become a social worker? What was that? How'd you get there?
You know, I had a mentor who, starting from the beginning at K-State, I started out with psychology. I wanted to be a counselor.
Okay.
And then as I got older and got into school, I had a mentor say, hey, everything you want to do, you can do with social work and so much more. So I started talking to social workers, and I was like, yeah, I kind of love that. And that's how I got into it.
What? So you got psychology at K-State, and then you went to, did you stay at K-State?
No.
Like, where did you go to college after that?
So I went to K-State in 99, 2000, and then life started life in.
Yeah.
And then I went back to Wichita Area Tech, Butler County, and then Wichita State. And I got my bachelor's and master's degree from Wichita State.
Okay. So what has life been like for you? You said you grew up in Mississippi?
No. My family is from Mississippi. I'm four generations American. So
okay.
A lot of people are like, you know, but... I'm just saying I'm black, okay? I'm black.
Okay. I understand. So you grew up here in Wichita then?
Yes, born and raised right here.
Okay. And how has your family like been with you identifying as lesbian?
You know, I cannot complain. I've had very, very protective, very supportive family. They will go for me, so...
Yeah.
I'm blessed.
I have
cousins and my brothers and sisters and my mom and dad and aunts and uncles. No one ever gave me an inkling of a problem. And if anybody did, it never got to me. So
you are 42. When did you come out?
When I was 18.
18?
Mm-hmm.
And what did that look like for you?
Listen, you already heard the story. Simona is a really good friend of mine.
So okay, you're the other friend.
Okay. So yeah, it was a whole bunch of denial. Just a whole bunch of that ain't me. That's not my ministry. That's not who I am. I don't like girls. Even though I think about from probably little bitty, having crushes on girls and not mm-hmm. really understanding before I knew the language. Mm-hmm. And then I get to that big age of 18, and even then it wasn't okay, but it just was okay. And we was on that phone call, and it just was that.
Yeah, so you came out to them on that phone call. Yes. That was the first time you said, I am too?
Yes.
Okay, so they probably gave you a little bit of confidence then, like after hearing that. And then,
absolutely.
Yeah, because
I give all credit to my cousin Martin, who
yeah.
is a nose bucket and pulled us on out the closet.
Nice, nice. I need to get him on here as well. Do. I need to get Martin here. But the conversation was good with them. What was it like telling your parents, your family?
Telling my family, my siblings was easy. Hey, yo. I like girls. Okay. My brother was like, okay. My sister was like, huh, that's cool. She's younger than me. My mom, actually, one day my mom called me while I was at K-State, and she said, your cousin told me that you like girls. Like, just like that. And I was like, what? No, not me. And just that conversation just kind of unfolded with, you know, I'm not upset, whatever. Once she got the confirmation, it went to, okay, now you need to come down here and do this, do that, do that. So it wasn't, I like to think that they already knew.
Yeah.
My dad was like, whatever.
Yeah.
I think the way that I knew that he was cool with it, he was like, we were standing outside his job and he was like, you know, I've been reading about artificial insemination. I was like, oh, father, I just need $20 for some gas and I'm ready to go.
That's, so, he was already wondering, all right, how are we going to get the kids?
Yeah. How are we going to get grandkids out here?
Yeah. That's cool. That's a good, I'm glad that you got a good experience yes. with that. So you didn't have anybody telling you shouldn't be this way or anything like that?
Not in my immediate family. My stepdad, the man who raised me that I call my dad, his siblings, preachers, mm-hmm. pastors, deacons. So, of course, you know, they had their thoughts,
mm-hmm.
but he's my dad. He ain't gonna get to me from yeah. him, you know. And I had one aunt on my mama's side that was like, you can't be this way. God doesn't like it. But I hung up on her. So. Yeah.
So you just, yeah, so you just don't associate with that side? Or
they came around. They did Good. Come around. I think once, I've always said, if my mom and daddy are okay with it, who is going to tell me anything different?
Yeah.
And they may have had their reservations behind closed doors, but they were very supportive. And, you know, I grew up like every other black kid, I think. Homophobic parents, gay jokes, sissy this, whatever. So mm-hmm. I think when it became right in their backyard, it was different.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It is. It's okay unless it's around here.
It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they knew me, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not different. Just because right. I have this different identification, I'm not different. I'm the same kid, same person that I've always been. And I think that helped a lot. That
yeah.
I didn't change anything about myself. I cut my hair and pierced myself up, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As soon as you came out, you
as soon as like as soon as I came out, cut all my hair off, got all the piercings, and was like, yes, this is how I'm living.
Yeah.
And that was about a year, and I'm tired of this.
Yeah. Like, I don't have to do. I don't have to do all that.
I don't have to do all that.
Yeah.
I don't have to do it.
Just be yourself.
Yes.
And now you're married, correct?
I am.
So your family has brought in your spouse and. That yes. love is good there.
Oh, yeah. We've been together good. For almost 18 years. So.
Oh, good. Black love. Hey.
So love they accept that. Her, and sometimes I think they like her more than me, and that's
yeah.
okay.
Hey, I feel that. I feel that. Like, yeah, I understand that completely. I think it's just because they've had me longer.
I think so. They call me and be like, hey, where's Raina? She got a phone.
Right. So with your relationship, and you have kids as well, mm-hmm. how did that come about? Like, did you guys do the IVF and stuff like that, or
no mm-mm. She had three when we met.
Okay.
And so we just became that family, and then later on we were foster parents.
Okay.
And then the two that we have, we adopted through foster care.
Nice. What was that process like for you in the adoption?
It was okay. This was in 2014 2015. So I don't know how familiar you are with the system. Youthville had the contract for foster care.
Okay.
And as we were going through the adoption process, they lost the contract. Oh. So we basically had to start over with St. Francis.
Okay.
And they lost all our paperwork. So, like, we really had to start all the way over. And the only caveat to that was we couldn't adopt our kids together. So we couldn't adopt them as a two-parent. I had to adopt one and she had to adopt the other.
Okay. Because it being a...
Because we were queer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, did she adopt the one that you adopted now? Like, are you both now on the guardianship, or...
We are not both on the guardianship. That is simply because life happens and we just have not gone down there and done all that legal stuff.
But you can do it. It is
legal and you can do two-parent adoptions. Yes.
Now you can?
Yeah.
When did that become illegal?
Oh, gosh.
You know?
Actually, I think it happened not too long after we finalized our adoption, because we were going to go through the same attorney to mm-hmm. do the two-parent adoption. We just never got around to it. So it's been legal for a while.
Nice. I'm glad that it's got to that point. Mm-hmm. Now, what changes, like, have you seen, like, the progression that we've made mm-hmm. being a part of the community that you've seen since, like, you came out in 2000, so.
I don't like the way you said that. But, really, when I came out, it was not okay to come out.
Yeah.
But then it became okay. Like, we had our places. We had our safe spots to go to. Most of them were clubs. So now, as I guess I'm older, an elder, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing kids that are 10 or 11 or 12 being out,
mm-hmm.
being proud of who they are, or even just identifying as queer, like, I'm not defining it. This, just know that this is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that is, it's heartwarming, and it makes me kind of go into Mama Bear a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, you ain't gonna mess with these babies.
Right.
You know, we went through the struggle. I had men come up to me and just because of the way I was dressed, want to, you know, fight me or
think
I'm a threat or something like that. I'm like, I'm soft as medicated cotton. Yeah. Leave me alone, sir.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, I've watched the changes. I've watched the transitions as we go through time. And mm-hmm. it is more acceptable now. I would say it's even kind of the norm.
Yeah.
I do get a little nervous because everybody want to be gay. And I'm like, but where was y'all at? You know? Like,
yeah.
And it's a great change. It's great to know that no matter when these kids or even adults decide to be true to who they are, they can find community.
Yeah.
You know, when I was coming out, you had to make your community. You had to build a family. So it's cool.
Yeah, it is. It is becoming I wouldn't say just like a norm, but it's becoming more welcomed in public spaces more than it has been. And you work with a population like with the transgender community. Are you familiar with like the two bills in Kansas specifically that they're trying to do? They just had like a committee for it.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it. I've heard about it. I'm not that, you know, I try to leave politics alone and just deal with life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really familiar with it.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to pass two bills in Kansas, and it's just like one for like the transition portion, like they're not wanting them to be able to get the hormones or the testosterone that they would need at a certain age. And then they're also like the second one was like also bringing adults into that too. Like even like teachers could be held liable, like if they were being affirmative in their classroom and whatnot. I will have the two bills below just because I feel like it is important because in Kansas, it's like happening right here. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, like you said, we don't deal with politics because like, it's like we stay out of it. But those are two bills right now that are pretty important for like the transgender community that's going on right now.
I do a lot of referrals for my youth to MCARE just so that they can get gender affirming care and gender-affirming doctors. So I do try to insulate them a little bit just to keep them protected. I know that they were talking about passing a bill that you had to go back to the gender that you were born as on your driver's license. And mm-hmm. also, I did hear that the testosterone, because I believe now at 14 with a therapist and parent permission, at least in foster care, mm-hmm. you can start testosterone.
Right, yeah.
It's either a gel. I think they do start off with the topical, and then you can move to the injections. So
yeah, and like there were some parents like in the committee like being like, this should be our choice, like ours mm-hmm. and our child's. This shouldn't yes. be a debate with politics.
100%.
And like you said, like it is with a parent, a therapist, mm-hmm. and the.
I'm not gonna get too political.
Yeah, but yeah, yeah.
I do believe that people sometimes overstep, and they don't acknowledge mm-hmm. the amount of work that goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
These kids are not waking up and saying, "Oh, I want to be XYZ."
Right.
So I'm gonna go do that.
Yeah.
There is so much work there. Just the paperwork for MCARE is massive.
Yeah.
And then you do have to see a therapist. And not just any therapist. You have to see a psychologist or somebody who is actually trained to sign off on that.
Mm-hmm.
You go through with your primary care physician or whoever the physician is at MCARE that is going to maybe walk along with you on this journey. It is not an overnight process.
Right, yeah.
And I think a lot of times in the news and in politics, they try to make it seem like that's what this kid decided at 11, and oh my God, yeah, he just had Cheerios.
Yeah.
That's not the case.
Right, yeah. And I appreciate you sharing that with everybody so that they do get an understanding. It doesn't happen like that. And like we said earlier, if it doesn't relate to you, it's none of their business at all.
And there's no, it's not a lot of times they try to make it a safety issue. It's not a safety issue. They are monitored, they are safe, they are under the care of who they should be under the care of. This mm-hmm. is better than so-and-so who has a degree in accounting and just so happens to be in politics saying, oh, no, you're a boy, so you stay a boy.
Yeah.
That makes no sense. That is between them, their parents, their family,
yeah.
and their doctor.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate that. I'm glad. I didn't know that you worked with that population, but I'm glad that we were able to talk about that, because I do want to give out the word of just like those two bills that are being passed. Because, yeah. Now you mentioned something with just like dudes when they look at you and you're like, I'm not trying to fight you. I'm just living. I feel like I get that 100%. I, as studs, right?
Mm-hmm.
People think we want to be men.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be a man. I'm just, I dress like this. This makes me comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you call me bro, I know I'm not a bro, but that's not what I'm trying to be. I feel like you look at me and you think that that's what you portray me as. What is your experience with that?
That is my experience. And that's with strangers, okay?
Yeah.
And I'll be clear. That is with strangers. People that don't know me, or they'll see me and immediately look at the fit and be like, oh, she want to be a boy.
Yeah.
Did you hear that sentence?
Yeah.
She want to be a boy. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't want no problems. There's only one time I don't want to be a woman, and that's, you know, what time
it is. Yeah, but, for real. Oh, my gosh.
But, like, you know, but that's my whole life. I've been a tomboy, and then I just kind of grew into who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And now as I get older and I am more comfortable in my femininity, I can use my hands. I can say and do and be a little bit sassy if I'm older.
Yeah.
But when people look at me, I know that there is a intimidation. But I'm here to tell you now, I don't want no parts of masculinity. You can have that. and I like to give a shout out to the dudes in my life, like my brothers and my dad and my uncles, because I always say that those are real men.
Yeah.
They can look at me and not care.
Yeah.
You know, I still get the same treatment as any other female that they would treat. You know
yeah.
what I mean? I'm not soft
yeah.
by any means, but if, you know, he's giving me the same advice that he would give my little sister or my niece or my just female cousins. And I think that them being comfortable in their masculinity allowed me to be comfortable in my femininity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can be who I want to be. Before, when I first came out, it was a costume, for real. I'm not even going to lie. It was a costume. I had to be tough. I had to be like, I had to put this face on.
Mm-hmm.
And just really, it was a costume. Yeah. That wasn't who I wanted to be. I never wanted to be a thug. I'm a nerd. I like to read. You know, I just want to be comfortable.
Yeah.
I want to wear sweats. I want to wear baggy clothes. That's who I am. And being able to be around, like, my brothers and my uncles and stuff and, you know, have them be proud of me just for being me, kind of negated all that stuff that I get out in the community. Not our community, but the regular community.
Yeah.
And it also made me stop going out.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a while, because there was a time where I would go out and it would be a problem.
Yeah.
I'm at the gay club. Like, you in my place. How you mad at me?
Right.
And you in my spot. And, you know, it was just uncomfortable and awkward. And then for a little while, my brothers would come out with me, and that made it easier. And then I just grew up, and that just wasn't my scene no more.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I, like, that's a really good point of just, like, when you, like, you first came out, you cut your hair and then got a whole bunch of piercings.
Mm-hmm.
I think... Not that's not for me specifically. I always like was a tomboy, but something that I did feel like I had to do was fit in, like do more bro type things. Something recently, someone said was like, "Hey sis," instead of bro, and I was like, "You know what? I like that. Like I am a sis. Like like I was like, I don't know why I never like corrected anybody. Like, but." I'd rather that than, yo, bro.
Yes.
Because it's like, I am a cis, and you recognize that. Like, I am a female. You see me for who I actually am. Like, not who you think I am because of what I look like on the outside.
Yeah. I embrace all of that. And because I have advocated for our trans brothers and sisters, it used to be back when I was putting on this fake thing, when people called me sir, I used to be like, yeah. Now I'm like, what am I not doing?
Yeah.
What is wrong? Because I know from talking to, let's say, one of my trans sisters, that being misgendered when you are fully female, like, that hurts.
Yeah.
And it's not a game.
Yeah.
It's not something that you would, people may overlook it, but it means more to somebody else. And to me, I feel like, you know, respect it.
Yeah.
Respect my gender. I identify as this, no confusion, and I expect you to do the same to everybody.
Yeah. Now, I usually always correct someone if they're like, sir, or whatever. Like, especially, like, on the phone, I guess I got a deep voice, so it's automatically. But when people see me in person, you see these big old titties. Like,
I swear to God.
But then on the flip side, it's like, maybe they're trying to be more inclusive and think that that's my pronouns.
Yes.
Like, I'm trying to dress like a... But no, like, I'm... Ma'am. Like, maybe you are trying to be inclusive by saying sir or whatnot, but just because we dress like this doesn't mean that we're transitioning or anything like that, too.
So. And if you're curious, just ask.
Yeah.
What are your pronouns? And I'm quick to be like, she, her.
Yeah.
Because that's who I am. And... You won't offend me. I'm not offended.
Right, yeah.
But please don't get offended when I correct you.
Yeah.
And don't oh, because you look like a boy, you want to be that.
Yeah.
Nothing about me says boy.
Yeah.
Are you identifying clothes as gender? That's crazy.
That part. That's crazy. Yeah. No, I'm glad I'm not the only one that feels that way, because I feel like on the internet and stuff like that, like, studs, they do get a bad name with trying to be a man or whatnot, and that's not it.
That is not it. I am impressed, though, with this new generation of stud that's coming out, because they are embracing their femininity and all of the things, and I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I feel like I wasn't comfortable in a place growing up to be able to do that, to be able to say, I'm going to go get my nails done, or I'm going to go get a pedicure, or, you know, I'm not going to put no 30-inch bust down in it, but if that's what they want to do, you do that, but, like, you know,
you
identify how you identify.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a difference.
Yeah,
and, you know, like, there's, I don't want to be like old school, but them old school dykes and studs like me, I don't, you know, I'm just who I am. I embrace my femininity within the masculinity within that.
Yeah.
And then, like, I don't know, I have a niece who is very much a sassy stud, and I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Like, get your hair cut. That's fine. Get the crispiest lineup and throw a ponytail in.
Yeah.
Do you, boo?
Yeah, I think that's becoming with, like, both genders, too. Just, like, boys growing up, even though they might not even be a part of the community, just like getting their nails painted or doing something out of the norm, mm-hmm. the gender norm that would be, is a lot. Like, yeah, this generation, and that's why it's becoming political, because I feel everybody sees it, that this generation coming up, like, they've pushed, like, a lot of us to just, like, be more comfortable mm-hmm. and do things, and so, like, a lot of people want to, like, count them out, but just, like, in their own way, like, they are doing, they're making yes. a way for themselves.
They're making themselves known. They're mm-hmm. putting, they're leaving a mark, and it's amazing to watch, and I enjoy it, and it's fun, and they're living, and they're having fun, and getting your nails done and getting your nails painted is about expression and hygiene. So that, to me, that's as far as it goes.
Yeah.
You want to have clear on your nails? Go ahead. I don't understand all the shellac or the plastic they put on their nails. I got daughters, and I'll be like, whatever.
Yeah.
Is this pretty? Okay. You know, and people ask me, how would you feel if your son was to paint his nails?
Hmm.
I'm old school.
Yeah.
I'm gonna accept it. I'm gonna be like, okay. You know, I don't.
So even yourself, you would be like,
because of the way I was raised, you know, like yeah. I got that stuff in me.
Yeah.
So it's a constant fight. That's why when I see these young people, God, I sound old, out here living their life and being free, I actively suppress the part of me that has that homophobia, that, you know, Black hate,
mm-hmm.
that I suppress that part.
Yeah.
Because it's embedded. Yeah, that you can do whatever you want to do. Yeah. You can be whoever you want to be. If you want to get your hair done, get your hair done. If you want to get your nails done, get your nails done. If you want to wear a dress, wear a dress. This is clothes. This is exterior.
Yeah.
It's all a social construct.
Yeah.
It's made up by somebody. The reason you know that is because if you go to another country, it's not the same.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's a good point, just like of having your own ideals, like, that we've grown up with, like, we're still a part of, like, because we were raised from that older generation, so that's mm-hmm. like still within us. So it's like our generation has to break that cycle
yes.
for our younger kids mm-hmm. to be able to, like, it's like you said, it's still like embedded. It's a little bit like it's still in the mind, yes. like, but
it's a fight. It, yeah. You know, that self-hatred, that, you know, I was raised, I went to church every Sunday, had an uncle come pick us up in the bus, we went to church, after church we went to Bible study, all of that stuff. I was raised doing all of that stuff. Now, my parents didn't necessarily go to church, but they believed in it and they reinforced it. So you kind of get that, you know, you get that homophobia, mm-hmm. you get the, you know, oh, the racism, you get the prejudice, all of that stuff that, you know, it kind of, I don't want to say leeches off of your parents, but it kind of does.
Right, yeah.
And it may be unintentional, because my parents were kind and loving people, but they were also old school.
Yeah, it was so, it was taught.
Yeah, it's like the stuff that they learned.
Yeah, for sure. Now, being in a household with two parents, two women parents, what is that dynamic like for your kids? Like, do you feel like they feel a difference, see a difference? What does that look like?
Honestly, I have no idea. No. I think we tried to make it as normal as possible.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I have very different personalities. and I won't say that they didn't get teased. I'm not going to say that they don't get questions.
Mm-hmm.
We try to be very open. We try to have communication. You can come and you can ask us about anything. Especially my wife,
mm-hmm.
the older kids, they talk to her, they confide in her. I'm not going to lie, as they were growing up, I was more of my father's child, so I was a little bit more of a hard I was a little bit more strict, and yeah. I was a little bit harder on them than I am on my younger kids. And they'll tell you, they're like, what, if we'd have done that, we'd have gotten knocked under the floor. It's probably true. So I don't think that their experience was much different than mine, because they say you are your parents,
mm-hmm.
even on accident. So I did try to stick to a lot of the discipline and a lot of the structure that I had growing up without the abuse.
So yeah.
I think that they would classify their childhood as normal. I hope.
Yeah.
If I was successful, they would classify it as normal.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wondered, like, the dynamic of that, just because kids are mean, so and they can be bullies. I didn't know, like, if your children or, like, if the parents, like, if you guys hang out with, like, the other parents, like, how that dynamic is. Like, do they treat you guys differently? Are you pretty welcomed? Like,
you know, I think we were pretty welcomed, even from our first set, our older kids, with football and basketball, all the families were very welcoming.
Good.
But again, you know, it's community. You make those connections through people that you know already. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that they would have put us in spaces where we were not safe. I think our kids kind of felt that too. I'm not going to say that they didn't have people that were mean. But my kids are tough and they are resilient and sometimes scary.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, I feel like every kid has its, like, battles, though, like, just as a child growing up. There are COVID kids, too. Like, that's already within itself. So, they're already done with a lot.
Yeah, our first set was, they were already adults when COVID hit. Our younger boys went to private school, so they were able to kind of stay in school because their class sizes were small. So, I think they only had, like, a 2 to 3 month gap where they didn't go to school.
Oh, nice.
Otherwise, they were in school and they were getting their socialization. And I'm a social worker and their mom's a nurse, so they're getting all the things.
Yeah,
they get enough coping skills.
Yeah,
be like, shut up.
That's that is also not, like, being a social worker, like, within social work, you said you work with groups and individuals, right?
Mm-hmm.
What does that demographics look like? What do the demographics look like with the people you work with?
Well, right now I work in a middle school. So the middle school that I'm at, we're probably 50-50. Let me take that back. We're probably 48-48, black, white, and then Hispanic and other identified Native American, Asian. We have a pretty good mix. So I think in that aspect, we have a lot of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Still need more teachers of color, but we have a lot of diversity. In my group home, they're all Caucasian.
So okay.
That is an interesting dynamic coming from their perspective and then to come in and I'm their house supervisor.
Yeah.
Big black lady. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's me.
What is that dynamic? Do you feel like because you're within a marginalized group, you can still relate, like, a lot to them? And, like, you're black and part of the queer community, so.
I hope so. I try to. I try to be as open as possible. I try to make sure that they know that my job is not to hurt or harm.
Mm-hmm.
I am here to help. We're going to try to give you the tools that you need. And I think that most of the people that I've encountered, or most of the youth that I've encountered, they're from Wichita, so they're not, they have been around black people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them have come from other group homes that are ran by black people. And I think that the one relieving factor is that I am a part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand terms. I understand. I have the resources. And I think that puts them at ease.
Yeah. I want to quote something that I seen that you wrote that relates to your books that I really want to talk about. You said, being a member of the LGBTQIA+ community comes with its own challenges, but being a member of the LGBTQIA+ community and the black community is downright dangerous. Let's unpack that statement. Like, what did you mean when you said that?
I think I wrote that right around the time when a lot of our black trans sisters and brothers were being killed, and they still are.
Yeah.
And just from my experience, you know, it's not, let me be clear, it's not white men pressing me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's not white men cutting their eyes at me. If they are, it's for a whole different reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's I've never been threatened or physically harmed in this way by a white dude. It's always been black men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know it's the homophobia.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's what it is. Just being in circle or community with black people and queer folks and having to, I don't want to say pick which identity I'm going to show up as,
mm-hmm.
but having to pick which identity I'm going to show up as. Yeah. I mean, I know who I am. I know what I look like right. when I go into spaces. But when I'm going into these black spaces where I don't know it, I'm going to turn a part of me down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because otherwise there is a danger aspect. I don't know who's looking at me, who finds me threatening, who finds me to be gross or disrespectful or, God, an abomination.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, I've been called that.
Yeah.
Like, do y'all know what that means? That's crazy to call yeah. a human being that. But that's what I mean. It's just, even with black women, you know what I mean? Like, you would think that since I'm a safe space or you're a safe mm-hmm. space for me. No, it's just as much homophobia. It's just as much violence.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up in the gay clubs and growing up when I did, it was black women that often popped it off, I guess I could say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, she said this or he said this or whatever. And then that got, you know, the men started and then it became an issue.
Yeah.
So when I say dangerous, I mean not having a safe place to land.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can say, oh, yes, I'm black. And then I should be safe over here with black folks.
Right, yeah.
But I'm not.
Yeah.
Depending on the black folks.
Yeah.
You know? And then you have to, you ever been into a room and you have to survey the room and look and you looking for a familiar face and you're like.
Yes, yes.
And you find a safe space. Going into some parts of the black community, you don't find that safe space.
Yeah.
And you're met with aggression. You're met with displeasure. You're met with all of the things, all of the hatred, all of the misplaced anger. You're met with all of that. And to me, that makes it dangerous because our community holds on to that hatred or holds on to that oppression. And please, don't get me wrong, I love my black people. I love mm-hmm. them, you know.
Yeah,
but
this is real. This is real.
And I hate to say but, you know, however, as much as I want to protect my black community, like I tell people all the time, I love black men. I do. A lot of people think that because I'm gay, I hate men. That is crazy.
Right.
I was raised by a wonderful man. My uncles are wonderful men. Everybody has their own problems and their own struggles. But I know that they were a safe place for me.
Mm-hmm.
Always. And I can go somewhere else and be around black men and not feel that. And I think that it hit me when I went into a black space and did not feel protected. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Do you have brothers?
I do have brothers and uncles, yeah.
I feel protected with my brothers and uncles.
Yeah, 100%.
And I know that wherever they go, mm-hmm. women are going to feel protected.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the kind of men that they are.
Yeah.
But being in a space with other black men and not feeling protected is super lonely.
Yeah.
And it is ostracizing, and that's what I mean by dangerous, not mm-hmm. being able to look around and find a safe space.
Yeah. No, you're 100% correct. I literally just brought this up on a previous podcast of just like going into a space full of black people and just searching for someone who looks like me and then find mm-hmm. like, okay, I'm good. I belong. I feel mm-hmm. safe. So I get that 100% on that aspect. And like you said, it's not just from men. Sometimes it's from the woman as well. Mm-hmm. What do you feel like is the reason for that, if you can think of any? Or how do you feel like we could make it better? Like, what could we tell those people to help us out in those spaces?
Okay, so I giggle because my initial thought was white people. And what I mean by that is really oppression and racism. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean. I mean, you think about it. There's an emulation from somewhere,
mm-hmm.
you know, even the stereotypes that we get are just an emulation from the racism and the oppression that was experienced not that long ago, by the by. I'm only 42. Okay.
Yeah.
I got an aunt that couldn't drink out of water fountains. She's still alive.
Yeah.
So,
and people do, I'm sorry, you know, people think that was so long ago.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It literally was not.
It
like,
was not. We are in Wichita, Kansas. Yeah. Okay. I'm talking about, my parents told me, hey, you can't go to Derby because blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You know, hey, you got to be careful when you go here, X, Y, and Z. It's 2024 there.
Yeah.
I went to Hoisington, Kansas for a basketball tournament. It's like, and that looking around for some familiar faces. Yeah. I'm so glad we had a team with us because there wasn't, you know. Yeah. And just, yeah, it's finding the oppression, because that is where it kind of stems from. And then the way that we, and I say we, I mean Black people, the way we came up.
Yeah.
It's always been flight or fight, and just kind of, we don't really have a freeze. It's just, we're programmed to fight. So that's what I think it is.
Yeah. I like how you said that. Like, it is fight or flight within the community. There is no freeze. Because it is always just like, you're on the defensive side of it in a lot of spaces. And being a queer woman of color who is also a social worker, do you feel like, even in those spaces, do you feel like that too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, I told you I'm a nerd.
Yeah.
And I like to tell people the story because I want you to realize this wasn't that long ago. It was 2012. What school did you go to? Wichita State?
No, I'm from El Dorado.
Yeah. So I went to Wichita State. I'm a nerd. I've always had...
Oh, wait. Yes, I did go to Wichita State University. Okay. I'm actually also a social worker, too. I got my master's at social worker.
Do it. Happy social worker.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Wichita State, I've always had good grades. I was on the dean's list. There's an advanced standing program. I applied for it, and I knew I was going to get accepted because I had the grades. Mm-hmm. Okay, got accepted. She got in because she was Black. Seriously? In 2013?
Wow.
I got in because I was Black. So I still get those whispers.
Yeah.
I still get people that don't feel like I'm qualified to be in the spaces that I'm in. And you probably experience the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, you're a social worker? Oh, yeah. My wife experienced the same thing. She's a nurse. Yeah. She's a master's level nurse. Oh, are you the CMA or HHA or whatever? I can't be the one in charge?
Okay. Yeah. So. Yeah. Like, it is everywhere you go.
It is everywhere. And we have some fantastic professors over at Wichita State that kind of, you know, insulate you, protect you from that. Shout out to Brianne Gilkey. Shout out to her. Shout out to Dr. Marche, because they are some real strong advocates.
And, yeah. Yeah.
So they made that experience not as bad.
Yeah. Brianne was there when I went to the master's program as well, and she definitely helped me out through a lot of stuff. And is still there for me till today. If I need a reference, anything, like, she definitely has my back. So definitely shout out to you. And it was good to see that representation in that program.
Yes.
Going there. And Dr. Colombo, I don't know if she was there.
She was after me.
Yeah. Yes. So just seeing that representation, like, we've already discussed previously on this, but it matters. Mm-hmm. And we search for that, like, once we see that. And then, like, I don't know, in Florida right now, Florida State just took away all their DEI positions. Mm-hmm. And if that becomes like a nationwide thing, like, that is going to be so, like, backwards, ass backwards with everything, all the growth, all the youth is doing right now, and just like the progress that has been made, like, it baffles me.
It baffles me too, but I try to be a positive thinker. Mm-hmm. And I think that the impression has been made. You can take away the title.
Mm-hmm.
You can take that away. You won't take away the progress. You won't take away... There was an obvious need for DEI programs. And those who identify that need, I have faith and I have hope that it'll continue. It just may not have the label. Because representation matters. And the people that want to be represented will fight to be represented. You know, like we go into a place or go into a social work space, we're looking for representation.
Yeah.
Oh, you're a Black social worker. Fantastic. Me too.
Yes. Yes. And like, it's funny that you said, like even like the Black people, they don't really accept you. But like, if I'm in an all white space, I'm looking just for the Black person too. Mm-hmm. Like, where are we at? Like, so that I feel comfortable in this space. And speaking of representation matters, And with the Florida, like, taking out books and stuff like that, we got your books here. Mm-hmm. The Stud Handbook, which I love that. Like, that's cool. And we got a couple's 52-week workbook. Mm-hmm. And we have a Melanated Lesbian Love. 52 workbook, yes. A couple's 52-week workbook. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk about these books, Miss mm-hmm. Author.
Author. That's crazy.
I love it. So tell us a little about the Stud Handbook.
What's... So this started out as a joke between my niece and I. She was in a relationship with a stud, and she was like, Annie, why aren't they like you? Why don't they do what you do? And because I don't know. I'm old school. I take care of my family. My dad was a provider, so I feel like I'm a provider. My mm-hmm. mother, she loved us. She took care of us. So I kind of got the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. My dad taught me how to be a provider. My mom taught me how to be a mother and a wife and a nurturer. And I'm a Cancer, so I'm a nurturer by just who I am.
Yeah.
So it did start out as a joke. And I was like, I really want to have more things for us by us. Mm-hmm. And I didn't. When I did the search, I didn't find anything. Now, there are a lot of Caucasian lesbian books out there, mm-hmm. but I wanted something that had our name on it and had our label on it. And it really is just a self-exploring journal, just kind of where you talk about the things that you want to talk about. It talks about getting your well woman exam. Some of the things that, from my experience, we don't do because... toxic masculinity. Yeah. See, I wanted to not say that,
but it is what it is.
That, you know, we don't want to get our well women's exams. We don't want to do anything that makes us appear softer or mm-hmm. feminine. Mm-hmm. And this book explores that, or at least that is my intention with it, is to explore those sides. Why do you communicate the way you do? Why do you carry yourself the way you do? Somebody told you was a stud, mm-hmm. and you just ran with that? How did you learn to identify that? And do you know what it is? How do you know what it is?
Yeah.
Where did this language come from? So that's kind of my thinking with the Stud Handbook, is just kind of a old journal.
Nice. And then we have a couple's 52-week workbook. Mm-hmm. A Melanated Love.
This one was written specifically for black couples, simply because we don't have the representation. Representation matters. Mm-hmm. In this workbook, you're going to talk about, how was your first interaction with the police mm-hmm. as a black person? Did you have an interaction with the police as a black couple? How mm-hmm. is it raising your family? How is that different? How do you show up in spaces? As a husband, how are you showing up as a supporter, a provider? Are you communicating with your family? Are you communicating with your wife? How do you feel X, Y, and Z? When I said this to you, how did this make you feel? How do we fight fairly? Because everybody fights.
Yeah.
You know, how do we do it so that it's not ruining our marriage? How do we have a disagreement and be able to come back?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm not one of those people that says you don't go to bed angry. If you need to sleep on it,
Sleep on it.
Yeah. Get at me in the morning. But can we talk about it? Mm-hmm. Are you going to start throwing things?
Yeah.
We need to talk about that. Yeah. We need to know that from the jump. So I hope that, it is my hope that that stuff is communicated through the questions in this book.
Nice. And
kind of the same thing with the lesbian version.
Yes. Because,
you know, we need it.
Right.
I am in a lot of lesbian spaces where I see couples that are trying to emulate heteronormativity. They're trying to emulate straight couples.
Yeah.
And that don't work. It's dangerous. And when I say dangerous, I don't mean like pow-pow dangerous. I mean, if you're not being authentic mm-hmm. and recognizing that you are two women and you're going to have problems that women have problems with, and then you have to face them mm-hmm. as two women navigating this world.
Yeah. And
I wanted to try to capture that in this book. Lesbians have to communicate. Lesbians fight. I know you said no inappropriate terms, but this does talk about intercourse, the lesbian bed death, and kind of like long-term couples. It also has the same thing in here, how that intimacy might fall off.
Yeah.
And how do you do, what do you do to get the spark back? Mm-hmm. You got kids, you got a job, financials. How are we talking about finances? Are we talking about finances? It kind of goes the gamut of things that I felt like, things that I've addressed with couples and couples therapy. So I just thought that, you know, write it down. Let's see what happens.
I love it. I cannot say that. I love this so much. And just like the conversations that you're having within this, like that makes couples have, I feel like, because communication is key in a relationship, and it can be challenging at times, and we bring our own traumas into relationships. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like you brought your social worker in these books as well, to just like, if you don't go to counseling, which we know Black people have a hard time going to counseling. I just had someone tell my mom that they don't go to counseling because that's for white people, which it's, that's not the case.
No.
Everyone needs a little therapy and a little counseling. So these books, this is definitely needed. And I appreciate what you're doing. And I seen that you were scared to do this. Like, you just went out on a limb and just did it. So
it's been kind of a brainchild and a baby of mine for the last probably 18 months. And, you know, you get scared to put yourself out there, mm-hmm. because this is it. This is out there. This is on Amazon. Got my name on it.
Yes.
Anybody can grab these.
Yes.
They'd be like, oh, she sucks.
Yeah.
Here I am. So it took me a lot to go through and to put it all on paper. Like, writing it was the easy part. Making it make sense, making it flow, making it a workbook.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all the people that I talked to and consulted, just to get it to where it is and hopefully where it will remain. I'm going to do a second edition. Let me stop.
Yeah. I love it.
It was a labor of love. I say blood, sweat, and tears. Shout out to Nala, who is my cover design.
Yes, these I was going to say the illustration art is dope.
I know, she's like, please, all don't these text are me anymore.
Really, really good. Like, it's really good.
Yeah, I wanted to have some representation. You know what I mean?
Like, it definitely has.
And that. I wanted it to be not a gender, but I wanted you to be like, oh yeah, that's me.
Yeah, you know, I that's see that.
Me. That's us. You know, these are my friends. These are tailored after my friends. Tailored after people in my frat. It's just, I wanted it to be, you know, identifiable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I'm actually gonna purchase all three of these books from you today.
Okay. Not this one. It's beat up.
Yeah, I love the whole idea, the aspect, and what you're doing for the community. I want to just like thank you for, like, this is helping so many people in so many different ways, and it is brave to just put it out there, like, with this podcast, what I'm doing. Like,
yeah. Oh, man. Let me tell you. I watched your podcast. I watched your podcast with Mary, and I watched your podcast with, it was the guy with the voice, I believe. He was kind of, had a beard, kind of like.
Oh, Justice. Justice. Guy, but, I think
yes,
it was Justice.
And I watched Simona's podcast, your interview with them, and I was like, this is awesome, because we need it. We need a voice, and we need somebody to, I don't know if you recognize the leadership that it takes to pull the different voices of the community together.
Yeah.
And get them in a safe space, mm-hmm. and get them in the same space.
Yeah.
You know, because this is going to be a conversation starter. Mm-hmm. Hey, I was on Bear's podcast. What'd y'all talk about? Oh, this is what I talked about. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, and just kind of going from there, I think you talked about with Mary about how, you know, we don't connect, and we always have to frowny face. That ain't me. I want to be my friend. Let's go have some food. I don't drink, but let's go get some food or something.
Right, yeah.
So I think this is amazing what you're doing.
I appreciate that. Anything you want to leave with the audience?
Go to reflection.
Counseling. Go to counseling.
Go to counseling. Be you, always. Show up broken. Show up healed. Just show up. And keep showing up. Look out for one another. Take care of one another. Yeah. Go to therapy.
Go to therapy.
Black people, go to therapy.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you so much for joining my podcast today. It really means a lot. Like, I have a real published author on my platform.
Not real, though, but it's true.
Yeah, it is. And I really am honored, and I appreciate you coming through. And like I said, what you are doing for this community, I am going to buy all of these books from you. I will have the link for you guys, the Amazon link for you to be able to purchase these books, below in the description. So please go support Drika and all that she's doing. I will be doing a giveaway as well. I would like to do a giveaway with one of these books. I'm not gonna do it all because I would like to keep some for myself, but stay updated on all the Queen Talk socials on that, and I will let you know how you can be entered on the giveaway on these books. But thank you so much Drika, for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of Queen Talk. Please turn the notifications on, like, subscribe, comment, and yes, please go grab a book of this. It's good. It's good stuff, guys. Everyone needs a little help in their relationships. But
absolutely.
Family, friends, strangers, love.
Love.
Be nice.